Welcome to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio, your weekly dose of news from the diocese and around the world, plus commentary on tough issues that are impacting our lives today. Straight Talk, you've got questions. Hopefully, we have some answers for you today. I'm Jean Walls, along with today's co-host, Kelly Mesher-Collins, and we are blessed to be broadcasting from the Mercy Live Up studio on Iowa Catholic Radio. Today, we are talking about ensuring safe environments in foster care, adoption, all those times when kids are placed in homes. Kelly, give us a little sneak peek here. What are we going to talk about?
That's right. Well, our guest today is Bill Pierce, founder of Adoption Associates of Iowa, but today he's representing Iowans for Adoption. Now, I'm sure all of our listeners remember the two cases that have been in the news lately that were just horrifying. We had Natalie Finn, who was a teenager that was adopted out of foster care and was homeschooled, and she died of starvation in the family home. We also had the case of Sabrina Ray of Perry. She was also a teenager that was found emaciated and died of starvation. And she, too, was also adopted out of foster care and homeschooled. So Bill is going to kind of walk us through the situation. How could this have happened? What can we do about it?
Again, it gives people angst, the things that are happening in today's society. We're going to delve into that. But first, some news. And let's put some of this in perspective. According to data on the Prevent Child Abuse Iowa website, the instances of child abuse in Iowa have shown significant improvement over the past 10 years or so. The high was 13,455 children in 2006 to a low of 7,400 in 2014. Unfortunately, the last 2 years there have been some increases. Those reductions are good, but one child abused is one too many. Now, just to put it in perspective, in Iowa, the legislature has defined child abuse to include the following. It's failure to provide adequate food, shelter, and clothing or other necessary things for a child's health, intended physical injury, sexual abuse, presence of an illegal drug in a child's body, allowing a known sex offender who is not the child's biological parent or caretaker's spouse custody or access to the child, manufacturing a dangerous substance in a child's presence, mental injury to a child, providing access to or showing obscene material to a child, and sex trafficking. So grab a pencil. If you have any knowledge of child abuse or are suspicious of that, there is an 800 number to call, 1-800-362-2178. Now, some other news of interest. Dowling Catholic, of course, is going for their fifth straight football championship. They will face off against Iowa City West this Friday in the state championship game at the Unidome in Cedar Falls. And just a sneak peek coming up this weekend, you're going to find in the Catholic Mirror that there are several people in our diocese who will receive one of the highest honors given to a layperson by the Holy Father. And Bishop Pace will present these awards to six local Catholics on Sunday, June 26th at St. Ambrose. But I'm not telling you who they are. Did I say December?
You said June.
June? How about November 26th?
That's all right. We all got summer on the brain.
That's right. Yeah. But I'm not going to tell you who they are. You're going to have to check out the Catholic Mirror this weekend. It will be in your mailboxes. It was announced the other day that the Vatican would like to establish contact with North Korea, according to Cardinal Peter Turkson of Ghana. The Vatican does not currently have a relationship with North Korea, but the Vatican is interested in preventing nuclear war. So North Korea is widely regarded as the world's leading prosecutor and persecutor of Christians. When we come back, we are going to talk about foster care, adoption, homeschooling. How do we keep those kids safe? You're listening to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio.
Be not afraid, for the Lord is with you. Connecting with God's extraordinary presence in your daily life is powerful. So join me, Father Fabian Moncada, and my co-host, Wilfrido Matamoros, as we bring you Be Not Afraid, a brand new show connecting you with God. Beginning on November 21st, we will be live every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Also join us every Sunday morning at 10:30 for our Spanish program of Be Not Afraid. En camino hacia la misa o saliendo de misa, escúchenme en el programa No Tengas Miedo con el Padre Fabián. So connect with God. And be not afraid.
The Catholic solution to the health care problem is here. Paying too much for your health care costs? Solidarity Health Shares is a health care sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund health care costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity Health Shares members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more info, call 844-313-4999, again 844-313-4999, or visit solidarityhealthshare.org, that's solidarityhealthshare.org.
Are you suffering emotionally or spiritually after an abortion? At InterVisions Healthcare, we believe you deserve healing and support. We found that there are no quick fixes, but meeting with others who share the same pain can be a good start. To learn more about how this healing ministry can help you, call InterVisions at 515-440-2273. Ask for Jenny. InterVisions Healthcare, it's a safe and confidential place to begin the healing you deserve.
Support for Dowling Catholic Sports 365 is provided in part by Ashworth Vision Clinic, with two licensed optometrists, Barbara Sheets, a Dowling Catholic graduate, and Dr. Todd Pedig. The Ashworth Vision Clinic team provides complete eye exams, contact lenses, glasses, glaucoma testing, and pre- and post-operative care. Ashworth Vision Clinic is located at Ashworth and 60th Street in West Des Moines. 515-440-4610. Online at ashworthvision.com.
Welcome back to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. This is Jean Wells, along with my co-host today, Kelly Mesher-Collins. It's a pleasure to be with you today. And we have our guest.
All right. Yes, Jean, thank you. Our guest today is Bill Pierce, who represents Iowans for Adoption. Now, just to refresh everyone's memory, last year we had Natalie Finn, a teenager in West Des Moines, who was found on the floor of her home in a diaper and human waste. Now, it's horrific to hear, but it's good to remind everybody what happened. The windows were nailed shut, and neighbors reported that she had been begging for food. She died of a cardiac arrest, which was due to starvation. She was adopted out of foster care family and homeschooled. We also had Sabrina Ray earlier this year, a teenager in Perry, who was also found emaciated and died of starvation. She, too, had been adopted out of foster care and was homeschooled. Now, Bill, everyone was shocked and horrified to hear these stories. And at what point do you think these two girls slipped through the cracks?
Well, there are several sort of cracks available throughout the process there. Well, the first one would have been when the families were selected to be adoptive candidates to begin with, that before they ever even knew these particular children, they would have gone through a training and selection and study process, a home study, and would have been approved as adoptive families for special needs kids. So at some point along there, the particular features of these families that allowed them to do these terrible things were missed.
You would have thought the windows nailed shut would have been a clue.
Well, the windows were probably nailed shut after the kids got there. So well, this is way before the kids were involved, yeah. When they were picking the family. So then the next point where you could make a mistake would have been when the families were matched with these children, because that would be somebody looking at the children, what their needs were, somebody looking again at the family, and apparently missing some clues, if there were any, about what these people were really like. Then the matching was made, and then there's a period of time when the children are observed in the home between the time of placement and between the time of finalization of the adoption. And again, there was an opportunity to see what was going on. And of course, I've done this, and I've been fooled. So I'm not condemning, necessarily the people who missed this, because I've missed things like this myself. Didn't result in tragedies this bad, but
because you have 25 years in juvenile law experience,
yes,
as well, I think.
Yes, and it's not easy to do this. But one thing that's an important point in this, and that is when they come back to court for finalization of the adoption, it's final. That after that, the children belong to the adopting parents just as your children and mine belong to us if born to us. That the state has no more or fewer rights with regard to those children and going in and checking on them than they would to come in and check on mine or my grandchildren. So they have the same right to privacy. And this means it has to be done right the first time all the way through. And in this instance, the children disappeared into the dark, and two of them died. So in a way, the whole process happened sort of out of view.
Now, many people were angry when this news came out, were angry at DHS because, you know, some people, neighbors, had reported Natalie Finn was begging for food, and they'd gotten complaints in both situations. Now, do you think it's DHS who should shoulder this responsibility, or does the problem go much deeper, and why?
Well, it's easy to cast blame, and there's plenty of blame to go around, and some of it belongs to us as citizens. DHS was charged with taking care of these children. They were supposed to do this job, and clearly they didn't. And my kudos to the new director, because he takes responsibility for this. He's accepted this responsibility. He's been on the media at least three times that I know of, probably more, mm-hmm. and always immediately mentions this case. In both of these cases and others, as indications that something went wrong, and that was them that went wrong. Mm-hmm. So they're not avoiding this responsibility. But the point is that DHS has no real constituency. They can't lobby to get more resources. They can't lobby to get more people. They just have to keep spreading themselves thinner. As the numbers increase, and it isn't just a matter of the numbers, it's also a matter of the kinds of abuse that we're seeing and the demands that go with that. So this is a situation where, in terms of trying to get anything done and trying to cast blame, the children don't have a constituency except for us, and we need to be able to prioritize making some finances available so that they can have the staff that they need. We talk about sending money to provide for development, for factories to come in and so forth, and I'm all for that. But the prosperity that leads to is kind of a dark prosperity if we are doing it at the expense of this kind of thing happening.
Now, Bill, you know, you're very good about saying, let's not cast blame. There's problems with the system. There's, you know, it's easy to miss you as an observer that went into these homes. You can miss things as well. But, you know, it's kind of like when you hire someone, you know, the best evidence of their future performance is their past performance. Isn't there a way to see how they have dealt with other children? Or are these all first-time adoptees where these really difficult situations happen?
Well, these particular children probably weren't adopted prior to this. I don't know that part of their history. But you're right that in any job performance, the performance it tells you everything you want to know. You are here operating this radio station. People expect you to do what you're here to do, mm-hmm. and we have a right to expect DHS to do what it's there to do. It's reasonable to recognize the difficulty that they are working under, but it's also reasonable to expect them to do what they're there to do, mm-hmm. and hold them accountable when they don't.
Now, after these situations occurred, there was a lot of talk that this was a homeschool issue, that it was the lack of oversight, that, you know, the government, the state wasn't involved in overseeing these homeschooled kids. In 2012, we have some numbers that 10,700 registered homeschooled children were in Iowa, and that's the latest figure we have because they stopped, you know, collecting numbers at that point. They were no longer required. But you're saying it's actually more of an adoption issue.
In my opinion, this case, it could be made into a homeschooling issue. And as a former school board member, school board president, you know, I guess that I would, as I've told the homeschooling advocates, if it were up to me entirely, there would be some reporting and some oversight of the kids that are homeschooled. But I think it would be misdirecting the energy and the needs to make that the point of this event. This was an adoption failure, not a homeschool failure, in my opinion. And that's sort of borne out by the fact that there are other families that we've seen that had similar situations. Nobody died, but they were still very serious. Mm-hmm. Nobody died mostly by chance. And that if we focused on the homeschooling and went through the political, essentially the political battle that you would have to wage in order to get that done, all of this would be lost in that. Mm-hmm. And we would be spinning our wheels, solving the wrong problem. I would like to see us focus on what needs to be done for this situation and to hopefully get the homeschool people to help us. There's a two-edged sword on that, because if you bring the state into their homes in a way that they find too intrusive, they will quit offering themselves as foster and adoptive candidates. Mm-hmm. They're great people. They have great families. I have several adoptive clients that through other years who have been homeschoolers, and all of them that I've worked with have done well. If we alienate them, I think that we will lose more than we will gain, because there would be families that we would need that we wouldn't have that would simply not put themselves forward. They're not without some leverage, and we need to have them working with us, not against us.
Now, I guess what concerned me when I heard about these issues, one of the things that concerned me was they were so close together and the situations were so similar. It made me wonder, I know I had discussions with a few people who work at the state level, you know, surely there's got to be more. If two situations so close together, almost identical, do you fear that there's almost like a monster that lies beneath the situation, that there are a lot more kids out there living in a situation just like these two girls?
Well, I think the iceberg rule applies. Mm-hmm. That certainly when I was in juvenile court, we knew that with all the kinds of things that we did, whether it was kids committing offenses or kids being abused, that we were only finding out about a small proportion of what mm-hmm. was really going on. There are other things going on that don't make the news very often, and that is there's child sex trafficking, or children are actually bought and sold. Mm-hmm. There is,
you think that's here in Iowa, too?
I know that it goes through
mm-hmm.
Iowa.
I'm
absolutely certain of that. So there are a lot of things that are beneath the surface that mm-hmm. are, in some ways, even worse than this. So we need to be aware that that's going on. And I'm sure that, more to this point, that there are children placed through the normal process out there not being treated well, that never make the news, and so we don't know about it. At the same time, we recognize that there are a lot of success stories as well.
Okay. Now, what can you tell us? I think it sounds like you have a plan in place that potentially could help prevent this from happening in the future. What can you tell us about the plan
sure.
you have put together?
We would like to give the court a choice to require a longer post-placement period. Now, for people that are not familiar with adoption terms, that is the time between when the child is placed in the home and the court has a hearing and finalizes the adoption. And that's generally 6 months. The law requires 6 months. And it's fixed at 6 months. So that is what the judge has to do if they're going to put the child in there. We would like to give them some flexibility to look at the situation and decide that maybe this one calls for 9 months or 12 months or 15 months of post-placement consideration before we issue that final decree of adoption that places the child out of reach and out of view. So right now the judges don't get to be judges in regard to that question. We call them judges. Let's give them a chance to exercise that judgment and decide how long that post-placement period should be. The homeschooling folks came up with plan that really looks good to everyone, and that is tying the receipt of the adoption subsidy to evidence that the child is there and healthy, and that evidence would be a medical practitioner has seen the child, certifies that they are healthy, and that until that certification is received, the adoption subsidy check won't be issued. One of the questions is, how often would that happen? Would that happen once a year, twice a year, or whatever? Right now, they seem to be running into a problem with that, with the federal government that provides matching funds. Whenever the federal government provides matching funds, they also cut off part of your state sovereignty by putting restrictions on how you can spend it. And there may be a restriction that says we can't put conditions on the way that this money is used. So I know that the department right now is exercising a real campaign to try to get that, to make that possible, but it may not be.
That homeschooling proposal does seem reasonable and not an undue burden. You know, to take your kid to the doctor for a medical checkup is something that any good parent does periodically anyway.
As they said that, we're doing that now.
Right.
And so, you know, we know that there are people who are far enough to the extreme that they won't take their child to the doctor either, but I don't think we're dealing with any of those in this situation. So they offered to help with that, and I think that it's on its face, regardless of who thought of it, it's a good proposal. I hope that we can do that. One of the things that the department has advised me that they could use would be some respite care, that is, giving the people who are working with these very difficult children a break. And it may be possible to tie that kind of a service into oversight as well, that you would have somebody, they can't provide respite care if they don't know the family. So if you had a regular situation where your respite worker would be somebody who would see you from time to time so that they would be prepared to come to your assistance and provide respite so that you could go somewhere else or do something else or go to the hospital, that would make that respite care workable. Mm-hmm. It would also bring them into touch with those kids in the family after the point of adoption, and of course they would all be mandatory reporters. We would like to see it at IONS for Adoption. We would like to see increased education and awareness of adoption as a choice that birth moms may be made more aware of this possibility. Some of the kids would not possibly be raised in families that resulted in abuse if they were adopted to begin with. And not to say that many of those birth moms don't do a great job of raising their kids, because I know they do. But if they had this choice and were aware of this choice, the number of adoptions would increase and the number of good placements would increase. But that would be in the infant area, not in the area that we're talking about.
Our guest is Bill Pearson. We're with the Adoption Associates of Iowa and talking about how to help transition these kids. And now this proposed legislation that you're talking about, Bill, with the extended wait period between finalization, between placement and finalization of an adoption, you're talking really specifically to foster children. Right, not an outright adoption,
yes,
like of an infant.
I'm talking about adoption, not of an infant. That's a whole different chapter of the code, and that's really not what we're here about.
Right,
but I'm talking about the foster to adopt special needs children that would have that longer
period of
time.
Thank you for clarifying that.
And there's also another way of trying to get the court more aware of what's going on, and that is the court-appointed special advocate system, that the court can appoint a person who becomes an independent advocate that can watch what's going on. They can have access to all of the Department of Human Services files. They have access to the child. They have access to the court. And essentially, they're the eyes and ears of the court. They can go out there while this case is in process from the very beginning and bring back to the court information about what's going on, and again bring the light of court scrutiny to the operation of the Department of Human Services.
Now, Bill, I had a conversation with someone in Iowa who is intimately involved with human welfare and child welfare services. And when we discussed this issue, he's from a different part of the state, so he wasn't entirely familiar with this case of these two women. But he was actually shocked and appalled that these girls had been adopted out of foster care, and then this happened, because he said there are so many checks and balances and, you know, appointments and checkups, and that a judge would have to oversee this process as well. So he was just baffled that then this happened. Do you have any sort of sense of what's going on in the parents' mind? I mean, why does this happen? Or, you know, why would they want to adopt these kids if this is going to happen?
They're subsidized adoptions. That's one of the reasons. Sometimes it's just the crass knowledge that you're going to get funds that will continue to basically be your business. But there are people who just really don't know what they're doing, and will get into this maybe with the best of intentions and then end up not being able to do it.
And, you know, another question I had is, it almost seemed as though, like in the case with Sabrina Ray, it almost seemed as though the family and themselves had been brainwashed, that, you know, we hear about the son, foster brother or adopted brother, you know, had drop kicked her down the stairs. You know, you had the grandma involved and covering up for the parents. You had a cousin who was covering up for the parents, who is now going to testify against the parents and part of a plea deal. What is going on here? I mean, it almost reminds me of where you hear about, like, World War II and people who are just, they're told what to do and they just blindly do it without thinking about the humanity of this person.
Well, as much as we would hate to say so, there are families that have an abusive tradition, and we've dealt with them too. So in this instance, a lot of them looks like are going to go to jail, and it looks like they're testifying against each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard for me to explain. I have no idea really what's going on in their minds.
I think that the end result of this conversation for all of us is that we need to report things. If we see something,
Absolutely.
Say something. If it looks suspicious, you know, at least ask the question and don't let it go by the wayside. That 800 number again is 1-800-362-2178. Call if you see something, say something. I want to thank our guest, Bill Pierce, for joining us today on Straight Talk. You can hear our show again tonight at 9 p.m. if you would like to tell your friends. For my co-host, Kelly Mesher Collins, and our producer, Deacon Tony Valdez, I'm Jean Wells, asking Jermaine Cousin, he is the patron saint for victims of child abuse, to watch over those children who suffer abuse as he did. We want to thank you for your support of Iowa Catholic Radio. We operate out of your generosity, so please keep us in your prayers and pledge your financial support at iowacatholicradio.com. Hey, we've got some changes, folks. Next Tuesday, 9 a.m., Father Fabian Mancata has his new half-hour show, Be Not Afraid, and we move to 10 a.m. for a one-hour show, 1 hour of Straight Talk. Something else for your calendar, though, December 8th, Dinner in December. Check out iowacatholicradio.com. There's just a couple of tables left. We'd love to have you join us, and Dr. David Anders, who is our guest speaker that night. Thank you all for joining us. God bless. Stay tuned for the Rosary.